You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and subscribe to the podcast so you get this bad boy once it goes live. We will talk to Tone Diggs, host of Hammer Down, and a part of the Pat McAfee Show family. What's it like to work in the industry with your best friends? That's what the boys do in the McAfee tree. That's what they do. We'll also get Diggsy's favorite plays on the board today. And he also one time got his hands on a duffel bag with $50,000 inside. How did he react? NBA favorites continue to clean house here. 30-15 against the number this postseason. I wish I was that square, honestly. The cream eventually rises. We know that in the NBA, but it's weird to see this happen ATS in the first round. I mean, look no further than the Brooklyn and Boston series. It went five games. Sure, Jason Tatum had his 50 and the Celtics won a game. But I believe the Nets covered four of the five games. I wish I was wired to think, yep, yeah, I'll just lay the points. And in a lot of those games, Brooklyn's laying double digits. Didn't matter. 30-15 so far, ATS, NBA favorites in the postseason. 66%. That'll make you some money. We've got updated series prices at the Superbook. Let's give you the series that are currently underway and almost over for that matter. Mavericks now minus 165, Clippers plus 145. That makes sense. I think that one is headed to Game 7. So you have a situation here where you can either take the Clippers in Game number 6, and that point spread now Clippers minus 2.5-ish on the road. I think it's probably a better spot if you take the Clippers to win the series at plus 145, and then you could potentially middle in Game 7, Clippers go back home. That line is at least 6, 6.5. You could take the dog. So you could have the Clippers plus 145 to win the series, and the Mavericks plus 6.5. Clippers win Game 7 by 4, you win them both. That's a possibility. I'm not doing it. I'm just saying that's something that you could do. Nuggets minus 250, Blazers plus 210. Game number 6 tonight in Portland, Blazers open 4. I'm already seeing some 5 here in the market. And I'd love to take the Blazers at that price, but I just don't trust their defense to win 2 straight games. Lillard's amazing, but they need to get stops. And they have to win Game 7 in Denver. And the biggest elephant in the room, Suns and Lakers. Now, full disclosure, we've got the Lakers minus 110. We are the underdog here. And I'm guessing, looking at this market, Anthony Davis probably not going to play tonight in Game 6. LeBron James, better stay on the floor, better not walk off the floor. I don't want to hear any more excuses. He's built this team. These are his guys. Walking off the floor with 5 minutes to go. Come on. But they need Alex Caruso, Dennis Schroeder, Kyle Kuzma. These guys need to make shots because LeBron, I don't think he's got a 35-40-point game in him. I don't think he's healthy. I don't think he even cares that much. If they lose, well, Davis got hurt. Well, he didn't have enough help. The guy loves to make excuses when he loses, and we're already getting that. It's already been built in. Before Game 1, LeBron's missed 26 of 30 with an ankle. LeBron's going to play tonight, Game 2. Yeah, we know he's playing. But that series price right now, Westgate's got Suns minus 330, Lakers plus 270. I took that one on the chin big time, Game 5. Waited until they ruled Davis out. Some books ticked up the 5. I bit the bait, took the 5. It was over in the first quarter. And I ain't touching this Game 6. I ain't touching the series. I'll roll with Lakers series minus 10. That one's already in. See what happens. Don't feel good about it, but Here we are. Two new series prices at the Superbook. 76ers and the Hawks. Embiid status? Day-to-day, but who really knows? Sixers minus 175, Hawks plus 155. And here we go. I can't wait for this series. Nets and Bucks. Nets minus 210, Bucks plus 180. I am interested in the Milwaukee side at that number. But this is a conversation that I had on the last show about, do we really like the team or do we really like the number? Yeah, I can get behind the Bucks plus 180. Throw a nickel plus 180. It's a nice payout. Do I like the Bucks to win the series? Take the price out of it? I don't know. They're deep. They play defense. They've got Giannis. I have a hard time thinking Durant, Irving, and Harden go cold 4 out of 7 times. It could happen. This price, though, I feel like minus 210 is low. I feel like it should be higher, minus 250, minus 280. Now, the books are going to write more Bucks money the higher they raise the Nets price. They're trying to write good action on both sides and balance the books. You're not going to write good two-way if you're giving away the Bucks at plus 220 or plus 215. So it's a balancing act. We know that. But even looking at the game one line, Brooklyn open 3.5. That tells me a lot. 3.5 to 4 now. Total 239.5. Even that feels low. And that total opened 241. That's on Saturday night, prime time. I like the under. 240s still available at a couple books. That's a high total for Milwaukee. And I would imagine Coach Budenholzer is going to want to play really slow and crawl up the floor. Bucks get into a transition game with the Nets, it's over. So that total's interesting. I like the under there. But that point spread, that seems a little short. So I think the wise guys respect the Bucks. The books respect the Bucks, and that's all built into these prices. I'm writing a story up for Fox tomorrow with Robert Walker, longtime bookmaker in Vegas. He used to run the Mirage in the 90s. He worked at the Stardust back in the day. This guy has seen it all. And I think it's a very fascinating situation across the country and even across the border to Canada. This new situation where the COVID switch has been flipped. And I brought up to Robert, I said, Robert, I know you let the money do a lot of the talking. You put a line up and you let the guys bat it around. But think about the potential next series, whether it be Vegas or Colorado. It's going to be Colorado. Colorado is going to have home ice against one of the Canadian teams, Winnipeg or Montreal. And the seventh game will be in Colorado with fans. However, three games in the series will be in Canada with no fans. How do you maneuver that series price? How do you maneuver games one and two and game seven? How do you quantify how much home ice is worth? I think it's impossible to put an exact figure to it, but this is something we've never seen before. It's unprecedented. So whatever that series price is, I'm curious if the home ice for the Colorado or Vegas side is baked into the price. Because there is no home ice. There's home ice. There's no fans. There are no fans the rest of the way in Canada. Did you see Colorado? It's a fucking zoo in there. They're going nuts. They went up 2-0 game one. All of a sudden, it's 7-1. Knights played good game two, but still affected by the crowd. And now they go back to Vegas, and there will be fans in the building there. The same situation is happening in the NBA right now with this Phoenix and Lakers series. What is it, 12% capacity in California? And it's not like the Laker crowd is a diehard basketball crowd. Half the crowd isn't even there at tip-off, rolling in with their fancy suits and their Gucci bags and all that. Have you seen the scene in Phoenix? It's a madhouse. 100% capacity. The home court is stronger in Phoenix than it is in Los Angeles. How are bookmakers keeping up with this? What are they tinkering with behind the scenes? Like I said, I don't think you can say it's worth 15 cents or 20 cents or 30 cents, but it's worth something. We know that. I feel bad for that Canada team that comes out of that series. Not only do you likely have to face Colorado in a seven-game series where you will likely lose, but you have to deal with their fans in their barn and that environment. And then you come back home. Say you come back 2-0, and I can hear a pin drop in your arena in game three. I know the fans don't decide everything, but it certainly isn't a fair shake for those Canadian teams. So I'll have that up tomorrow. I'll tweet it out at SP Shoot. Robert Walker with some great quotes per usual. The times, they are a-changin' in Boston. Wrote this up on Nesson.com yesterday. It doesn't matter, Danny Ainge or not. Seas are sliding in the wrong direction. It's crazy to think that 4 Octobers ago, the Celtics had Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, Gordon Hayward, and a promising tandem of youngsters Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Unfortunately, first regular season game together, Hayward fractures his tibia and dislocates his ankle, and he was never really the same in Boston. Boston still won 55 games that first year, but then Irving got hurt. He was out for the entire postseason with a knee injury, and the Celtics still went all the way to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals and met the Cavaliers, lost that game in Game 7. But that group, as we knew it, never got off the ground. And here we are, fast forward to today, Irving, Horford, Hayward, all gone, Jaylen Brown injured, Jason Tatum, rising young star, but this team needs help. And Kemba Walker's knees will limit them going forward, and they don't have the cap space to get around Kemba's $35, $36 million contract. So I talked to Jay Croucher over at PointsBet about the potential win total for this team, and he said, well, this year it was 45.5 over 72 games. And obviously that didn't come close. They finished 36-36. So they went under by almost 10 games. Croucher said over 82, that number would go out to 51.5 this year from that projection. But he said they'd probably start much lower, and the number that kept coming to him was about 46.5. So the number going down with 10 more games. Well, not going down, but, you know, generally speaking, when you're 45.5 over 72 and you're 46.5 over 82, you have depreciated as a team. And they'll be about 15-1 to win the East and as high as 40-1 to win the title. And I thought this was interesting. Croucher brought this up. He said, look, Tatum and Brown have to be instrumental in recruiting and selling the franchise to whoever is going to be that third guy. It's not Kemba Walker. It's not Marcus Smart. It's not Tristan Thompson. It's not Robert Williams. They need a guy. Croucher brought up, hey, what if they would have traded Gordon Hayward for Miles Turner? That could be a guy they could grow with. But he said, as constructed, they are not winning a title, and I agree. I think that's clear. And if they don't bring in a third guy with the help of Tatum and Brown, the Celtics are probably doomed with an upside of a 3 or a 4 seed that has an honorable loss in the second round. And that's where they're at. My, how the mighty have fallen in just 4 years. And of course, we can gamble on this Celtics stuff now. Danny Ainge steps down. Brad Stevens, the new president of basketball ops. We'll use the bet online numbers first. Jay Larinaga, he's one of the assistants now under Brad Stevens. So 3-1 on Larinaga. Jason Kidd, 5-1. Ugh. Chauncey Billups, 6-1. I like that a lot. Lloyd Pierce, 6. Sam Cassell, 7. Kenny Atkinson, 10. Ime Udoka, 10. Jerron Collins, 12. Alvin Gentry, 12. Nate McMillan, 12. Becky Hammond, 14. PointsBet is taking this in the legal American markets, and here are their odds. Jason Kidd, plus 350. I don't get the Jason Kidd thing. He almost ruined it in Milwaukee. They got rid of Kidd, brought in Bud. That team has taken off. I would not hire Jason Kidd. Guy's a loose cannon. Sam Cassell at PointsBet, 4-1. Lloyd Pierce, 450. Chauncey Billups, 6-1. Becky Hammond, Kenny Atkinson, 10-1. Garnett, 12. No. Van Gundy or Mark Jackson, 13. Paul Pierce, 14. Brett Brown, 18. And then you go down the page, Patino, 40. Kendrick Perkins, 100-1. Hey, we can gamble on this stuff now. You can do it offshore. You could do it onshore. It's pretty cool. You couldn't do this stuff 10 years ago. You couldn't do it in a lot of places 5 years ago. But the day that the news breaks, we got markets up. And these books are taking bets on this stuff. I saw Brian Scalabrine, or heard Brian Scalabrine, rather, on one of the local radio stations saying Kara Lawson will get a chance. She's the head coach of the women's team at Duke now. I'm all for it. But the prices say Jason Kidd is one of the front runners, and I disagree with that. I think Billups is a very, very interesting selection. 6-1 at PointsBet, 6-1 at BetOnline. That would be a guy that I would entertain, and if I'm Brad Stevens, I would look to Chauncey Billups. He has some coaching experience now, never been a lead guy, but hey, you can learn. And I think Billups, very smart player. He was always very smart as a point guard. That would be what I would do. I do a weekly radio show in Chicago with John Williams, and he was talking yesterday with one of his buddies on the radio about the Cubs and the White Sox both being in first place, and they were talking about the potential of maybe a Red Line Series or a Crosstown Classic in the World Series. And John says, well, I got to figure out what the odds would be. So I made a call to PointsBet and said, hey, let's get a prop up here. Sometimes when you ask, you receive. PointsBet has a market now in the state of Illinois on a White Sox-Cubs World Series. 100-1. 10 wins, 1,000. 100 wins, 10,000. If you go to their MLB Futures page, you check the World Series matchup box, and there it is, Redline World Series. 100-1. I don't hate that. Of course, I don't think it's going to happen, and I think it's built into the line that the books don't think this Cub thing is going to last. I mean, you look at the markets, the future stuff, and you look at where the Sox are and where the Cubs are, it's clear what the books think. Sox are minus 400 to win the AL Central. We talked about it on this show on opening day. Sox are a good bet, minus 130 to win the Central. Minus 400 to win the Central. To win the pennant, the Sox were the favorite at PointsBet, plus 300. 7-1 to win the World Series. Turn the page. Cubbies. First place. 32-23. Hottest team in baseball right now. 9-1 last 10. Bullpen's been outstanding. Second best in baseball. 2.64 ERA in the pen. Huh? Cubs. 3.50 to win the NL Central. Behind the Cardinals, behind the Brewers. 18-1 to win the pennant, 33-1 to win the World Series. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think those young pitchers in a pennant race, in a division title race, I don't think they're going to be ready. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. At 100-1, though, hey, I've seen crazier shit. The odds are strong that both teams don't make the World Series. Especially the Cubs. But how about that? Ask and you shall receive, 100-1 on the White Sox and Cubs in the World Series. We'll stay in Illinois for a second here. We'll talk about the Belmont Stakes and that doofus parlay Pats before we get to Tone Diggs. State of Illinois trying to legalize wagering on Illinois college teams, but you have to do it in person, which makes no sense. The amendment to SB, Senate Bill 521, has been passed through the House. The Senate did not pass the bill. They're going to look at it over the summer, whenever that is, and then the governor has to sign it. But the Illinois Sports Betting Amendment only allows betting on in-state colleges in person at retail sports books. So you have to think about who this helps and who this benefits in Illinois, because that's the way Illinois works. Who does it help? Who does it hinder? Well, it helps Neil Bloom and Rush Street over at Rivers Casino. It helps, indirectly, it helps the points bets because they're at Hawthorne and Crestwood. They're close to the city. You know who it doesn't help? DraftKings FanDuel. Because DraftKings is located in East St. Louis. FanDuel is headquartered in Collinsville, Illinois, which is 3 hours south or 3.5 hours south. So if I want to make a bet on the Illini or Northwestern in college football, and I have a DraftKings or a FanDuel account, I have to drive all the way to East St. Louis or Collinsville, make the bet, drive all the way home. How does that make sense? So I can roll out of bed on Saturday morning, and I can bet the NBA, the MLB, the NFL, the NHL, but I can't bet college sports from my home. I don't understand why. Like, what the fuck is the point? Either let us bet college in Illinois or don't. I don't understand. Remember, they tried to box out DraftKings and FanDuel from Jump Street, but then the pandemic happened, and then all of a sudden you were able to remotely register. Illinois, when they started sports betting in March of 2020, it was in-person registration. You had to go to the physical book to sign up for that book. And they did that once they knew where DraftKings and FanDuel were going to be, and William Hills and Elgin and Barstools and Joliet and Aurora. But then the pandemic happened, and the governor's like, you know what, forget it. Sign up on your phone. Inside the state, you're good to go. They've changed that, too, and now it's back to in-person registration. So if you want DraftKings or FanDuel, you still have to drive a million miles away. I digress. The fact that you have to go to an in-person place to bet on college football, college basketball, is a joke. And there are some state reps that are celebrating this. Look what we did. We're moving the post. Yeah. No, the bill sucks. Put it in and put it in all the way. It makes no sense to make somebody drive to a casino to bet on college football, but they don't have to do anything of that nature to bet on the NFL. These people, man. Unreal. Belmont Stakes. Here are your odds. Essential Quality, 2-1. Ron Bauer, 3-1. Hot Rod Charlie, 7-2. Rock Your World, 9-2. Known Agenda, 6-1. Bourbonic, 15. Overtook, 20. France Scotiana, 30-1. Now, my two guys, Uncle Kirk, Maiden Focus, they have made their decisions and their positions known. Uncle Kirk, as of early this week, he was all over Hot Rod Charlie again. With another 100 feet, Hot Rod Charlie probably would have won the Kentucky Derby. And he likes him here in the Belmont, especially with Flavian Pratt going back onto the horse, Hot Rod Charlie. Maiden Focus, bullish on Rock Your World. He wrote something up on BetSports the other day, and he's all over Rock Your World again. So Kirk is on Charlie, Maiden Focus on Rock Your World, and I have no idea. Lastly, Parlay Pats can no longer gamble. He's that guy that was hitting all those parlays for a lot of money. David Purdom had the tweet, at David Purdom. Sports bettor Benjamin Patz was sentenced to 36 months probation today after pleading guilty to sending threats to Tampa Bay Rays players. You remember the guy now? Parlay Patz, in quotations, is prohibited from gambling. Good. And he must participate in a mental health treatment program. I can't believe you only get probation for threatening Major League Baseball players. I think the punishment should be worse, but it's a good start. The guy is a clown. Fuck that guy, honestly. Because Randy Arozarena didn't hit a home run or Tyler Glasnow didn't have a bad game, he's going to slide into their DMs and threaten them and their families because he didn't win his parlay? What a piece of shit. So now he's prohibited from gambling, I guess. So he won't be able to make any legal wagers. Of course, this doesn't stop him from calling the bookie or going offshore, but it's nice to see some sort of justice for a guy that was threatening professional athletes because he didn't win his bets. What a sad life. Joining us now on Chicken Dinner, he is the COVID cowboy. You can't see the hat, but I can see the hat. His name is Tone Diggs, at Tone Diggs, D-I-G-Z. He is the host of Hammer Don, Monday to Friday, 4 o'clock Eastern, also a part of the Pat McAfee Show family. Diggsy, welcome to Chicken Dinner, man.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. I accidentally just went to speak into my microphone. That's not on right now. I'm just talking to you through the computer. Ken, thank you so much for having me on. I always have you on our show because you're incredible what you do. So I appreciate you reciprocating the invite to Chicken Dinner.
We have to tell the story first and foremost. This is back when I'm at VEASAN, and you're driving around. I don't know if you ran a red light or a stop sign. I'm telling the crying Kenny story, which I don't think you even know the finale of the story. I can tell you.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
You're driving around. You're just maybe going 35 in a 30, and, you know, the fuzz pulls you over, and you miss the segment?
I think there was a speed limit change because I was going, like, 75 in a 55, they said. But I could have swore it was 65. But so, yeah, I was going a little too fast, and I got pulled over while listening to VEASAN.
The story goes, Crying Kenny was this gambler who never won, and he finally put the limit on an under in like 1976. The Celtics are playing the Phoenix Suns, and your boy Crying Kenny has the under, and he's feeling real good because it's like 42-40 in the fourth quarter. That's the game when Havlicek hits a shot to send it to overtime. Garherd sends it to double overtime. The game ends up going to triple overtime. And the final score is, you know, 150-145. And Crying Kenny obviously loses his bet. He goes into his car back when Vegas was the Wild West.
Yeah.
Goes into his car and fucking shoots out the TV. And he tells the guy behind the counter, that's the last fucking under that TV you'll ever see. Now, I know you're the COVID cowboy, but I don't think you've ever shot out a TV. At least I don't think you have. What's the worst reaction you've ever had to a tough loss?
I got into gambling. My very first bet, I think, that I placed with somebody, I think it was 16 or 17. North Carolina basketball was -3 versus Florida State. I was a huge UNC fan then. I said, oh, no problem. This is going to happen. I think they were up by 27 at halftime. Florida State ended up coming back, also going to overtime. Florida State won in overtime. But for some reason, that game and, like, the ups and downs of that game got me hooked to gambling. Even though I lost that bet, I was like, this is the greatest thing on earth. And that's what got me into gambling. I mean, I've had some tough personal losses, like when the Steelers lost in the Super Bowl. I never bet on the Steelers, though, because I can't think clearly about it. Listen, I get gambling. So I'm never like too upset because I'm like, well, we have a saying around here, that's gambling, baby. Like, that's going to happen. So I never get too upset. I mean, there's been a lot of bad beats. I cashed out a huge winner this year, which wasn't good. I could have won like $8,000, but I cashed out for $250 because Georgia Tech was down 10 to Florida State in college football earlier this year. And I had a 5-team dog parlay. There's been some bad ones, but that one was probably the most – I was most upset. But I didn't lose. I just cashed out.
I had a buddy who had bought this $3,000 4K TV about 5 years ago, and it was like the hottest place to watch a game. And he had the surround sound, and it was a lovely scene to watch a game, especially on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday morning, whatever. He threw this TV off the balcony.
Oh.
And I was so mad at him. I'm like, what? Like, I would have just give it to me. I'll take it. I'll go home with it. I don't understand how you can spend $3K on a 4K TV and then just decide because you lost $100 to throw the TV off the balcony.
Well, luckily for him, that TV now costs like $500 because they're awesome and they're cheap to buy. It's my favorite thing in the world. No, I never gotten super mad. Well, it depends on how much alcohol I've had to drink too. So the more I drink, the more mad I get. But, you know, if I'm sober, I'm not mad at all. That's gambling, baby.
You love bad quarterback play.
I
do. Help me out here. Do you love when great quarterbacks play bad, or do you
love watching
Dan Orlovsky?
Well, let's not take a shot at Dan Orlovsky. He's a friend of the Pat McAfee show. I actually had a quarterback award that I would give out. This is like 2 or 3 years ago. I'd give out an award every single week for the worst quarterback of the week in the NFL. And the name of it, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it was like 17 letters. And it was named after all the great quarterbacks, you know, Nathan Peterman, David Carr, Tim Tebow, Dilfer, who else? All of the great bad quarterbacks were on this award. And I just named it after their initials. And I gave it out every single week. I just, for some, I love unders, huge unders guy. So when I, when I'm out, I just find it hysterical when I'm watching a game and this quarterback is just the absolute worst. I just laugh all game long and I have a great time with it. So no, I don't like when great quarterbacks play bad. I just enjoy bad quarterbacks.
So you're talking like back in the day when I'm 20, 21, I got rent on the line, Hawaii's playing San Jose State, and the San Jose State starter gets hurt, rolls an ankle, and then I got the freshman from Marietta, Georgia, trying to figure out what he's doing. I need him to cover 17. They're already down 35. That is pinnacle bad quarterback play. When the backup at San Jose State has to get you to the window, that's the definition of bad quarterback play.
So I just found it. The quarterback was named after Clausen, Tebow, Gabbert, Sanchez, Brock Osweiler, Ryan Leaf, Jamarcus Russell, Dilfer, Kyle Bowler, Leinart. I can't even tell who that is. Tim Koch, Joey Harrington. Those are some of my favorites.
Jimmy Clausen. I had to cover that year. That was the year after Cutler left, I think. And it was either, trying to think, Jimmy Clausen or Todd Collins, I think, were the options in Chicago. Something like that. Oh, my God. There are so many bad quarterbacks.
Listen, Tom Brady could have been the quarterback after Cutler. You can't follow Cutler, okay?
You're a Cutler guy, huh?
Ooh, love Jay Cutler.
It made SportsCenter one day. I asked him, you know, one of my buddies said, hey, you should ask him this question. I thought, I don't know. I said, Jay, why do people burn your jersey? This is after, like, he lost a big game and people are lighting his shit on fire and they're, you know, fire pits. And he looked at me, looked at the PR guy and goes, not the first time. That's his response. That's why I loved him and I respected him, because honestly, it just felt like nothing got to the guy. And I respect the chill.
Well, it was just, I love his personality. I watched every single episode with my wife of the reality TV show. It's just like he didn't give a fuck. You know, he did actually give a fuck about winning, losing, and stuff like that. But he did not give a fuck about pretty much anything else besides that. And I love everything about Mr. Cutler. Now he's trying to get half of Kristen Cavallari's company, because that's how divorce works.
I got to ask you about your Steelers. The win total here, it feels like I'm being baited to go over 8.5, especially with the extra game. I don't know about team speed. I don't know about the offensive line. I love Tomlin, and Tomlin's like that Andy Reid guy where you just, no matter what happens, usually it's a blind over. But I feel like I'm being trapped here to go over 8.5 at plus money or minus 10. It looks like it's too easy to go over.
All right, so obviously I'm a huge Steelers fan. I'll preface it with that. I don't get the Steelers hate coming into this year. Are they going to win a Super Bowl? Probably not. Has Tomlin, in his 15, 16, whatever seasons he's been in Pittsburgh, ever had a losing one? No. So it's automatically 9-8. It's automatically over. They have offensive weapons. Claypool, Deontay Johnson, James Washington, Juju, Najee Harris, Ebron. You can say what you want about Ebron, but he's not a bottom half tight end. I'd put him in the top half of the league. The line needs to be fixed a little bit. There's some things they need to do there. But the defense is good. The defense is always going to be good. So, I mean, it really relies on how the new OC and Matt Canada deals with Ben and stuff like that. But I don't think – every year I get this. Oh, they're going to be 6-10. That's what I used to get. Now it's 7-10, blah, blah, blah. I still don't – I mean, they went 500 with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph at quarterback all season long. And the team's not much different as far – it's just the O-line that's a little bit different. So I don't – even though I'm a fan, I don't truly get the Steelers. I'll admit when I think they're not going to be good, but I don't think that's one of these years.
I think it's a combination of two things. One, the metric guys and the Pro Football Focus guys.
Oh, they hate the Steelers.
Well, it's not only that they hate Pittsburgh – they love Cleveland. They've loved Cleveland for 3 years now. True. And for some reason, they love Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So I think it's that first and foremost. A lot of the wise guys are going to bet Cleveland over, Cincy over. They're going to bet those teams to win the division and all that. The second part of that equation is I think people are just ready for a change, whether they admit it or not. And I think in some weird roundabout way, we do have value on Pittsburgh over 8.5, and especially if we get plus 105.
To your point, I took Cleveland to win the division. I think I got it plus 220 or something like that. because I think they're good. I think their whole roster is good. They get Odell back. They improved their defense a lot. Their secondary was terrible last year, and they're much better now. I like Cleveland. I took them. It was hurt. It was painful to do that. That's a lot though, because I don't believe in the Ravens as much as I think a lot of other people do.
Yeah, they're like the best regular season team ever. And then they get to the postseason and everybody saves the playbook for Lamar and they just take them out in the postseason. We've seen that now, you know, 2 years in a row. I'm trying to – we haven't talked about this yet on your show because we're still in the thick of, you know, the NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, and also MLB's going on every day. And I love you and Gump going back and forth on baseball.
It's what we got to do right now.
I've done this the last 2 years, and I've made money one time. I have been able to hedge out the second time. I didn't do it. I rolled it and lost. But Kansas City to win the Super Bowl. They're like 6-1 if you shop around. If Mahomes stays healthy, they're going to the playoffs. They're the one or the two in the AFC. And I would argue, even if they're at Buffalo or at Baltimore, KC's probably still favored. But my bet is as follows. They're going to be, you know, 13-4, 14-3. They're going to have the one, and they're going to be at least a 5 or a 6 point favorite in the AFC title game. I can pretty much free roll all the way there. And then if I want, I can take the points with the dog or I can hedge accordingly. I don't know why I don't just make that 3 for 3, fire a unit or two right now at 6-1 and then see what happens. I can probably get out of it or profit no matter what.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like I'm not a big, like, I don't like taking the preseason favorites to play in the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl. But honestly, I don't know if it's happened with the Patriots and some other teams and stuff like that. But the two teams that played in the Super Bowl, like, I don't think they got worse. Yeah, KC lost some stuff on the O-line, but they filled those gaps. They filled that, like, they lost Sammy Watkins. I don't think that matters at all with them. Like, these two teams didn't get worse. Like, the same thing with the Bucs. Like, I think they're only going to get better. And we talked to Clyde Christensen, who's a quarterback coach for the Bucs, and he said, like, if we had an extra 6 weeks, we'd be even better. Like, I think the Bucs and the Chiefs are by far the two best teams. The Bills don't scare me because, I don't know, something about Josh Allen. I feel like I need for Josh Allen to be more efficient or something like that. I love him running around and stuff like that. It actually kind of reminds me of Ben in the early days, but I need to see him go farther before I trust them. And the Ravens and Browns are the other two with the highest odds in the AFC or best odds to win in the AFC. And I just don't trust. I agree with you.
It's almost like the rich got richer. And you're totally right about that. And I don't, you know, I hate to see the same thing year after year. Like, I hated that Warriors-Cavaliers shit that we had to watch for 3-4 straight years. I wanted change. And obviously this year we're going to have change with two different teams in there. I took a loss on your show for the first time. I feel bad, man. I gave you a loss on the Lakers, which was a dud. They lost by 30. And then I had the Jets last night. I will tell you a funny story, though.
Oh, yeah.
First time I did your show, I was reading the comment section as the show is going on, and it's like, this guy's a nerd, he doesn't know shit, and he doesn't give enough picks. And I went, believe it or not, I went 3-0 on your show.
I remember.
My DMs were on fire for like 2 weeks. Like, hey, who do you got tonight? Who do you like? Hey, do you like my 18 parlay? It was insane. And then I go back on the second time. We had another good day. So it's like your audience loves me. I don't know if they still do because I had a 1-2 day. But very excited fan base, and they flip quick. Like, I went from the fucking nerd who knows nothing to, hey, who do you like tomorrow?
Thank you for revealing that information to me. I know. Trust me. Is it just our fan base? I thought that was gambling Twitter in a hole. But is it more so the people that listen to Hammered Down and listen to Pat Show? Because I've been in a lot of Twitters. Gambling Twitter may be the worst of all the Twitters. Same thing with that happened to you. Like, Gumpy and I will get DMs at like 5 a.m. when there's three day games, MLB day games before our show starts, and they know that we're not going to talk about them. Like, hey, what's picks today? Hey, what's picks today? People don't trust themselves, I've learned. They don't trust themselves at all to make picks, and they're feeding for winners.
Well, I think you need to give yourself a little bit more credit. I think it's more than just the picks. I think they want to be a part of something.
True.
And that's why I think your show, Hammer Don, and Pat's show, it's so relatable because it's not some uppity broadcaster from Syracuse or Missouri or Northwestern that knows everything and uses big words that nobody can understand. You've got this familial vibe to your show. Pat has it as well, where I want to hang out with you guys. I want to do shots with you guys. I want to be a part of something with you guys. And I don't think it's as much as I want Diggs' picks. I want to be a part of the experience with the crew. And that's a testament to your show and your growth and I think the relatability. And it's awesome to see, honestly.
It's very well said, and thank you. I agree. Yeah, Pat has preached that all along. Like, hey, we're just a bunch of idiots talking in a microphone. And it's all like, we want you to feel like you're just hanging out with all of us.
You're doing sales before the McAfee show and before Hamadon. How much would I have to pay you to go back to sales?
It would take quite a bit. It would take quite a bit. I didn't.
How many zeros?
Zeros. You're at least it's going to be some sort of five zeros.
Okay.
Sales. I didn't hate. Like I didn't hate the office life. I mean, it was a grind. It was grueling, but I enjoyed my workplace. And I worked at ADP in Pittsburgh, and our office was a bunch of young kids, just basically like. We were all in our, most of us were in our mid 20s and we were having a good time. And the role that we were in was pretty easy. So we all were pretty successful and it was fun. Nothing like this though, like completely different. Obviously this is much more fun. It's what I've always wanted to do was talk. I mean, growing up, we all watched SportsCenter like four or five times in a row, even though it was the exact same thing, exact same highlights. Talking about sports has always been my number one passion. I didn't hate sales. I didn't hate the office life, but I'm not planning on ever going back.
You're in the toy factory right now. I had a boss tell me this a long time ago. And remember, we come from different paths. You know, I went from college kid to intern to associate producer to producer reporter to anchor. And then all of a sudden, like it finally just boomed for me. But we are in the toy factory and there are so many people that want to do what we do. And we just have to hold on to that. Keep grinding and make sure we don't say the wrong thing because I don't know if you know, motherfuckers are getting canceled left and right. So just be careful.
Trust me, we know that over here. We are very diligent on being good human beings and saying the right thing.
Wow, that sounded very robotic. Wow, you even sounded like an HR rep with that.
You know, we toe the line over here every single day. We're not dickheads. We're not bad people. What we say is what you'd be saying with your group of friends if your group of friends was a bunch of good guys and not dickheads.
I have two more questions, Tone Diggs. Hammer Don, Pat McAfee show.
Hammer Don.
When Pat shows up to your place with a duffel bag, this is right after you guys signed the deal with FanDuel. Huge deal. Yeah. Did you know? How did you react? I mean, this is what, 50 large in a duffel?
Yeah, it was I was speechless for a long time. For a long time, he always said, like, hey, when we get a deal, everyone's going to be taken care of. So we got the FanDuel deal, but we had no idea, like, what being taken care of meant or whatever, anything like that. So when he showed up at the house, I was already sleeping. I showed up at the front door in my boxers, and I had a baseball bat. and I opened the door, and Pat was there, and Foxy was there with a camera. And he told me, and like, I was speechless. I was like it was everything that we've been working so hard for like 3.5 years at that point, almost 4 years. And cause like the job that I had left in Pittsburgh was like, it was a good job. It was a good paying job. Had a solid future there. So like we all took risks in doing this, even though I told my parents, like when I moved out here, like, hey, I trust Pat. Pat's never failed at anything. I don't see why this would be the first time. But it was like accumulation of everything. It was awesome. The money part was awesome, but like also a sense of accomplishment for all of us to like, hey, we're being recognized for what we're doing and all that. It was awesome.
Yeah, and you said Pat's never failed. I mean, you guys have been, you know, day one since what, high school? The growth that you guys have had together. I mean, he had a hell of a career, college, NFL, and he's doing his thing now, but the path you guys have been on together, this goes back, what, like 15, 20 years now?
We grew up on the same street. He was at the bottom of the street. I was at the top of the street. So we knew each other from a young age, elementary school. He's a year older than me. So we were friends, but not like elementary school, same grade friends, junior high. But it wasn't until high school when we started hanging out like a lot. He would drive me to school every single day. We hung out all the time. So yeah, and then like through college and through the NFL career, we still stayed in touch, obviously. And I always told him, like, hey man, if you ever do something, like, I'm always in. Like, I'll do whatever. And then one day he called me out of the blue, like, hey, you still interested in doing something? And I talked to my parents, I talked to all my friends in Pittsburgh because I was leaving all them, stuff like that. I took like 3 or 4 days to get back to him. But I was like, hey man, I'm in. Let's fucking do this.
Let's fucking do this. I love that. All right, last question. I know it's early. I want to get a bet from you because people want bets, right? And
yep.
I will slide into your DMs if you lose and threaten everybody that you ever met. It's still early. I know you just got into the office. I don't know if you've crunched any numbers yet because Hammer Don doesn't start until 4
Correct.
O'clock today. But is there anything that you love early? NBA, MLB, hockey, Russian table tennis, anything you got for the crew here?
Yeah, so I knew I was coming on here, so I looked at the games quickly this morning.
little quick cap.
There's one that I know I'm for sure, like, that I probably don't have to look at that hard that I know I'm going to take, and it's the Giants, the San Francisco Giants, first five. They're -130-something versus the Cubs. DeSclafani's going for the Giants, and I feel like every single time that I have taken him this year, first five, he has been good to me. The Giants have been very good first five to me and Gumpy all season long. I can't remember. Who's he going against?
Zach Davies.
Yeah, who has not been great. So I'm going to ride with the Giants first five today. As if you want one from me, that's the one.
Giants first five. I also like the fact that you're going against the hottest team in baseball right now. So
yep,
I think this number probably – no, I mean, I think it should be – I would argue the price should be higher, money line in first five, but because the Cubs are hot right now, you almost get a little bit of a discount.
Yeah, I agree. I also was looking at maybe Austin Gomer of Colorado. I've rode him a few times this year. And then, tell you what, I'm thinking about the Bucks and Hawks series prices here, pal.
Oh, you like Milwaukee, but +180 or so?
I think I like the Hawks more.
Oh.
Because Embiid's out. Well, we don't know if he's out, but he's got the knee injury. I believe straight up in ATS, Philly is like 11-11 or 10-12, something like that without Embiid this year. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I like the Hawks. I like their scoring. We'll see.
Seeing the market move, buddy. Philly open -4 game one. Already seeing some twos out here. And we know if Atlanta starts hitting their threes, Philly doesn't have the ammo. They definitely don't.
I know. I agree 1,000%. And then there was a weird – I don't know. I wanted to get your thoughts on this if you have time.
Yeah.
So Denver is -290 on the series price. Portland +225. But Denver's like +5 or +6 tonight. I thought like they'd be closer on the line tonight if they were that big of a favorite to win the series.
I think what will happen is you're going to have if Denver – goes back home, game 7, 3-3, Denver's going to be a 6.5-point favorite.
Okay.
So I think that's it. And I think the math, you know, we talked about this on your show the other day. I think sometimes people see a price like -290 and go, wow, that's expensive.
Yeah,
but if you think about it this way, do you think Portland has the defense to win two straight?
No idea.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, it's like, look, I don't love laying -290, but maybe it should be -450.
I'm going to take a good look at Denver plus the 5 or whatever tonight, just because that series has been so close back and forth. I think Dame might be a little discouraged after his effort the other night and not coming away with a win. So I may look at Denver tonight.
He is Tone Diggs, at Tone Diggs, TONEDIGZ, the COVID Cowboy, Hammer Don, and the Pat McAfee Show. For more entertainment, more relatability, and let's be real, more degeneracy, check out Hammer Don Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern. Diggsy, I appreciate your time, man, and we'll do this again soon, I'm sure.
Thank you so much. Can't wait for you to come back on Hammer Don.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Tone Diggs, my guy, the COVID Cowboy. Record check, 133, 124, and 5. We're down 2.1. Had that brutal Lakers pick plus the 5, so that brought us down from -1 to -2.1. And we've got 3 pending. I'm going to ride these out. We have no choice. Lakers series -10, Clippers series -10, Avs series -180. I feel good about that one. Have you checked the board lately? Avalanche -800 at one book, -1,000 at Bet Online. I think we're going to be okay in that one. Coming up on Chicken Dinner this month, Ian Epstein from PropSwap, Ariel Epstein from Sports Grid, Barstool Big Cat, Jason Mizrahi, Rufus Peabody, Chris Thurston, Rob Pizzola. That's a hell of a guest list, if I do say so myself. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next week right here on Chicken Dinner. Broken dreams held together with glue. I gotta keep on trying till that day comes true. I know that all my life I've been tired and blue, but still I keep on fighting. I got too many things left to do. You see, my brother told me so. You'll be the greatest man alive.